Well, we'd like to welcome everyone to this work session. We've been out to the Mount Logan's Middle School, Mount Logan Middle School, for a visit. We'll now begin our work session, and our first presenter is our wonderful principal at the high school. So, Shane, if you would like to get up and give us a report.
You bet. And the place you want me?
I think the last time you were in front of the board, you sang for them.
I offered, but they told me I had to use my minutes. So.
I would let.
Well, in that case, if you would like to sing, we'd be happy to hear the Logan High song.
Oh, I don't have that one fully memorized.
Oh.
Well, there's a few of us here. Fred will be more than happy to help.
All right, sit down. You can stand
whatever you like.
How about
you? You want to sit at the table with me?
Oh, come up here.
I can stand at the mic.
Not looking at people, so I'm going to do it.
People don't know that.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. We were excited at the prospect of being able to come over and talk with you just for a little bit about some things that are happening at Logan High School here at the beginning of the school year. You know, the first thing that we wanted to convey was once we got our brand new administrative staff all in place and the three of us had time to get together, we actually took a break from the building and went and had some French toast and biscuits and some breakfast and actually just talked and said, you know, what is it ultimately that we want to create as an administrative staff at Logan High School? And we started by saying, you know, let's define what our belief statements are. What are the things that we as an administration are going to believe in and set as the groundwork to make all of our decisions that you proceed on? And so we came up with four. The first is it good for students? You know, that's the big number one question. Are we doing things for students? Are we doing it for the adults? And we want to make sure that we're focused in on students. Second element is it ethical and is it kind? Making sure that the things that we're doing are within the parameters of the law, within policy, within the things that will be beneficial to promote students and their well-being. The third we wrote just for Zane is it fiscally responsible? And so, you know, that's just something that we want to look at and say, are the things that we're doing, you know, is it the right way to be spending public money? Is it the right thing that we need to be doing? And the fourth is it supported by research? One thing that we said we wanted to include was data and research and be able to identify that the things that we're doing, there's a reason for it and that there's research to back up what we want to do. So once we got our belief statements all in place, we said, okay, next let's set our vision. What is it that we want to accomplish? And so our vision is that we are going to create and sustain the premier high school in the state of Utah. We want to be that school that everybody comes to look at that wants to know, hey, why are they having such great success up there in Logan? Let's go see what's going on. So that's our vision. Now we said, okay, our mission is going to be, how are we going to support that? How are we going to accomplish that? And so using our guiding principles and our belief statements, we came up with Logan High School administration leads through effective use of professional learning communities, response to interventions, positive behavior supports, and research-based practices to ensure academic success for all students.
I didn't get that written down, so.
Would you email that?
Yes, absolutely.
I would love that email as well.
So
that's what I got.
You give it to me, I'll get it out to you.
Okay. So that was kind of what our preliminary meeting was. And we said, you know, from this, we're going to be able to go out and now work with our staff, work with our students, and get to work because we've got some work to do in order to accomplish those things.
Would all of your faculty there?
No, when we did this, it was just the three of us. This was our administrative vision and mission, not our school vision and mission.
Right.
Just the vision and mission for our administrative team. And so, you know, from the three of us, we felt like this is what we needed to do to put us in the right direction. So how have we started to implement these things? Well, the very first thing that we did is we said, we've got staff coming in, we need to do something. We hear stories, the three of us being brand new as an administrative staff to Logan High School. We said, you know, we hear a lot of things. Jim spent some time at Logan several years ago, and so he had some institutional knowledge, but it wasn't necessarily current. Jill had some limited resources in working down at South Campus. And so he said, you know what, we need to dispel some things that is a common thread that we keep hearing. And so one of the very first things that we did is we tried to convey to our staff in one of our meetings that when we approach problems, we see a problem as the problem is bigger than me. You know, I can't do this. The problem, anything that we face, it's more than what I myself can handle. But it's never bigger than we. And so taking me and just flipping it around a little bit, we get to we. And the only way that we are going to accomplish becoming the premier high school in the state of Utah, the only way that we're going to accomplish seeing that academic success for all students is if we all have a purpose in that. And so as part of our activity, we have the staff write down on a piece of paper everything that they have been frustrated at Logan High School, whether it be from the district level or whether it be from department level, whether it be from students, from families. What were their major frustrations that they felt were holding them back, that were not allowing them to proceed and become better than what we currently are? And they took this little piece of paper and we gathered out on the patio, and we filled up some crimson and gold balloons with helium, slid the note in, then filled them up, tied them. We all went out onto the L on the center of our football field, and this was our symbolic gesture of letting all of that stuff go. So on the count of three, we let the balloons go with all the issues and all the concerns and everything that we felt were negative, that were preventing us from moving forward. We let them go. And that was our symbolic action to say, you know what, we're starting out afresh. We're starting out new. And it's time for us to focus in on what we're going to do rather than what has happened to us. And so that's one of our first activities that we did that was very well received. And then the next thing that we did during that same day was we had just come away from a principal professional development day, and we had Annette Brinkman come in, who's been working with the district. And as part of Annette's presentation, she talked to us about, you know, here are three things that you really need to find out in your staff. The first is, what makes our school great? What are the things about our school that we love? And so we recognized that would be something good to ask. You know, we want to know, what are the things that the staff perceives as being, please don't ever take this away from us? The second question that we ask is, what needs to be refined? Are there certain things that are happening, that are occurring, that we don't necessarily like, that we think could make us better? And with that, we pose that question. And then the third question is, how can we as an administrative team support you as teachers in the things that you want to do? We broke our staff up into smaller groups so that they could be a little bit more effective, and they brainstormed and they came up with lists. I tell you, they came up with lists on all three of those points. And what they determined are, then Jim ran the activity, he collected those, and within about a week, Jim had assembled them all, prioritized, this was said, and it was said six times. And so we were able actually to create a documentation to discuss what those elements were. So I'm going to let Jim talk to us just a little bit about that research and what came out of that and the things that we're doing now to address those elements.
You know what, I wish I would have brought the results of that survey, but let me just tell you that those three questions, I had them write them on butcher paper and divide them up into about groups of 6 to 8, and so there were about 10 groups, and the top five answers, or the top five, let's see, the answers to what is best about Logan High, there was about 30 different things, ranging from the academics to the sports to the drama to the fine arts. I mean, there's really a lot to celebrate at Logan High School. And then what needs to be tweaked was just as long. They had a lot of ideas on what needed to be tweaked, and they were really quite similar to what the administration could do for teachers, which was the third question. And so what we did was prioritize those, and I put the top five concerns of the faculty. I just noted them, and the top concern was class size. And number two was attendance. And number three was communication amongst administration to faculty and school to community. I mean, there were just communication lines needed to be improved in probably three different areas. So we took those five top concerns of the faculty and we assigned those to each of our responsive school teams. And so data and evaluation took on the challenge of class size and schedules, and Shane's in charge of that responsive school team. Attendance was given to the logistics responsive school team, and I'm working with that team. And in that team, there's 16 or 18 teachers, and we divided them into three groups. And we're looking at what do we need to do to make our attendance policy work as it is, and we asked for just a little bit of latitude on having teachers have the opportunity to work with students on Wednesday mornings when we have time, or after school. And if they do that in a 30-minute block or an hour block, they can email myself or Andrea in attendance, and that student can make up or get their credit restored through those types of activities as well as Saturday school. So I know there's a lot of things going on right now, but that's just kind of an idea of how we're addressing those top five concerns in our responsive school teams. And then Jill's over transitions with communication, and they're looking at updating our website and improving communication through technology to the community. Interventions and programs and site-based management, we have two of our lead teachers over those groups, and Shane was communicating with them on their work. So, anyway, I'm pretty excited with what I perceive to be the feel or the mood at Logan High. I think the teachers are, the teachers that I've talked to are pretty excited about having Shane as a leader, because communication's already improved, in my opinion. The Monday minutes that he puts out sets the stage for the whole week, and I feel like we're addressing those kind of issues in a real positive manner. So,
can I have a clarifying question, please?
Sure.
So did you, totally redo your responsive school team?
Absolutely not. The responsive school teams are the same five teams as they've always been.
So the same people were on the same team?
No, that's what we did differently. We assigned ourselves as the leaders of those responsive school teams, and then we allowed the teachers to select what responsive school team they wanted to be a part of, which I think was a wonderful idea to get teacher buy-in, and then we'll have much more positive discussion as we proceed with our work.
The other element of that I think has been very successful for us was when you took a look at the list of who was on which responsive school team, there were 30 staff members that were in one responsive school team. And we just had discussions with those that ran the teams before and said, how does that work with 30 people? And most of them said, it doesn't. And we're a voting body, and someone comes and says, here's what we've decided to do, and we just need your approval for it. And so as we talked, not as an administrative team, but as everybody who was talking about our responsive school teams, we kind of came up with, it's much more effective if we work in smaller teams. And so within each of the larger responsive school teams, there are pockets, or we said no larger than six. And so there are now small groups. So for example, in our data team, say that we've got 25 people, we've got five different groups that are working on smaller little elements that lead up to that. Interventions is a great group to look at, the programs and resources group. because they're really looking at interventions. They thought that was one of the number one things that we needed to be talking about. And so one group's looking at how do we effectively use our Wednesday intervention that we currently have. Others are looking at, okay, what does it mean to have an intervention schedule altogether? So we're not just talking about homework help or tutoring, but we're really trying to provide an intervention for the kids that need it. And then another group was actually was going to be looking at how does that fit into within a master schedule? Is that something that needs to become a part of our discussion? The last group was really said we need to look at the data. You know, why are we doing an intervention anyway? You know, we've got to pull out the data and we need to start looking at it and start addressing the things that we need to do. So, you know, the one other item that came out in that five was they really wanted to focus on site-based management. And so we thought that this would be a great way as well. You know, if the teachers want site-based management, then they have to be a part of the team. You know, they've got to be a part of the solution. And I think that these smaller groups have really enabled the teachers to feel like they're having a say. They're having some input into what we need to be doing. And they're able to address their own concerns. So, you know, I think that little just tweaking those responsive school teams just a little bit has really been beneficial. And I believe it's going to be very beneficial for our students because that's our number one criteria, right? Is it good for students? And so that's what we're looking at. And I believe that in doing this, it absolutely is going to be better for our students. In communication, a few things that we have done is we've created a couple items. As I visited with a couple members from our community council, they really talked about there is a chunk of parents, maybe chunk's not the right word, there is a group of parents that really like to communicate through electronic means. And so it was important for us to recognize that and say, on top of the letters home that we do, on top of the phone system that works sometimes, it's only as good as the data that we have inside the system. Are there other ways that we can communicate with our parents, community, with our students? And so I'm kind of a techno nerd myself and really enjoy that stuff. So I created a Twitter account that is @GrizzPrincipal. And I think I've got 10 followers on Twitter right now. So, and it's growing every day. And so GrizzPrincipal, providing some stuff there. We created a Facebook page. That is Logan High School Administration. So people can go and like that, and if they like it, then they get updates. It's really been fun watching. We just started last week doing this, but it's really been fun watching how many parents are providing some great feedback about they love the information about homecoming events. You know, there was some confusion about when the seniors were going to be doing their street painting and stuff like that, and I was able to quickly dispel a lot of that just by putting something out on Facebook, and it's amazing how quick word spreads. The other thing that we've done is all three administrators have provided our cell phone numbers to our parents and to our students and encouraged them to contact us. It's really, I'm kind of amazed at how many phone calls I've already received. If I get a text, I automatically know it's coming from a student. If I get a phone call, it's coming from a parent. And so that's kind of my way to gauge that. And it's pretty true. But I've really appreciated, I think, that when parents have had some questions and they didn't know exactly where to go, just giving me a phone call, and if I can't answer it, I return their phone call or whatnot. But I feel like because of that, some of the misconceptions that our parents end up having now and again has really kind of been lessened. Because I appreciated someone calling and saying, hey, I hear you're changing the street painting, and being able to have a conversation with them. She said, well, I'll volunteer to supervise, and I'll bring 5 friends with me. And, you know, just kind of worked it out to where they were able to do that. But I don't think that would have been available if people didn't feel like we're open to them contacting. So we're hoping that that's going to help in that process, is being able to do that. also in the line of communication, we set the expectation as an administrative staff that it was our goal to have every single one of our students' families contacted in the first 3 weeks of school with a positive contact. I think research backs it up, going back to our fourth principle. Research backs us up that if we can make positive contact with our community, with our parents, letting them know that we are extending the olive branch, that we're not waiting for them to come to us with a problem or with something else, but we want to actually let them know, hey, we're here for you as well. So we ask in all of our classes that our third period teachers contact all of the students that they have in their third period class. Visit with our seminary folk, and they wanted to join in. They wanted to do the same thing. So it should be outside of any of our kids that maybe were at Bridgerland, all of our students' families should have been contacted. It hasn't happened all across the board, but I would say that it happened with the majority of our teachers. They took that upon themselves and they did it. I want to share with you just two quick stories that came out of those phone calls and those conversations home. I had one teacher who came and he said, you know, Shane, when you told me this, I kind of thought it was the stupidest thing in the world to be contacting home. You know, that's parents need to be calling us or whatnot. He said, I called a home and left a message, and I got a phone call 2 minutes later. Just the phone rang right back. And it was a parent that said, I've had I don't know how many kids go through Logan High School. This is the first time I have ever been contacted about anything, and it was a positive contact. And, you know, it kind of made this guy that went into this thinking, this is silly and why are we doing it, really a believer. And, you know, he kind of indicated to me that the rest of his phone calls were a lot easier to make after he had that one positive element. And so, you know, that was a great one. The other one that I want to share with you just happened just this last Friday. Thursday or Friday, we had a teacher that called, and a lady picks up the phone and she says, oh, I am so glad to finally be talking to somebody from the schools. She's like, for the past week, I have had a phone call that shows up on my caller IDs coming from the schools, and it's a recording, and it's in Spanish. And I don't speak Spanish. I don't know what this recording is. But I could pick out Escuela. I knew that was school. And so the guy's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, maybe it's our attendance and maybe we have the wrong information. I'll make sure to let our office know that that's not an accurate number and we can start changing that. So it was a great conversation, and he and this lady will probably call and visit with each other even after this is all over, because they actually created a relationship. And she has no kids in our school system. But she commented how cool she thought it was that the school was doing that as well. Through this action, we are finding out that there are a large number of our students who we do not have accurate information in our system for. And this is really helping us to clean that up because we're able to identify the kids that we don't have the right numbers for. Same thing with our freshman visits. We still have about 100 of them to go, and we're still trying to get out to visit everybody. But through that process, we're discovering what kids have moved. We're figuring out what kids don't have a phone number anymore, or they got rid of their landline, and here's their cell phone numbers. And so hopefully we're going to be able to clean up our records a lot better than what they were through this process. And so we thought that was pretty cool and something worth celebrating.
And I'm sorry, yeah. I'm going to start piping up. And I appreciate that. I was one of those parents that have never been contacted either. And Kira got a call. And then James, like, really sad because he hasn't had a positive comment about him. He's like, Mom, my teacher must hate me. So it was very, very, very refreshing. And I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, you bet.
And it didn't make just me feel good, but it made Kira feel good, too.
Yeah.
So it's like she got the little diploma to come to that you came by. And she got that phone call within the first couple of weeks. And it's like, you know what? This is going to be great. So
I met with your whole family.
Except me.
Except you.
I know. If you had came and I said, I'd offer you a refreshing beverage and a treat. My family is pregnant. Yes. Come again. Would you come again? Shane's got to come, so you should both come together. And Jill, all of you should come visit me at one time.
Well, make sure that you're actually calling us.
Exactly.
You know, the final thing that I'm going to invite Jill to come up and talk to us about some of our celebrations that we've been doing, but one huge element that I've always has been ingrained in me is, in order to have a truly effective professional learning community, you have to celebrate, and you have to celebrate often. And you need to celebrate everything that is a success. And so we wanted to bring that into you and share with you some celebrations that we have and that we've had within the last couple months that I think are noteworthy and really a great opportunity for us to celebrate Logan High School and the awesome students that we have.
I get the best part of the program, the celebration. So I have been totally amazed at Shane's great ideas, first of all. But we do celebrations every time we get together as a faculty and staff. And I think it's lifting spirits, slowly but surely. Anyway, and I'm going to share with you guys, you've got your handouts in front of you, but I don't know if you guys heard that Bo Brownie was the coach of the year last year. And they announced it in the state finals, and it was a pretty neat experience. I was there, and I don't think very many people heard that, which is sad to say, but that's kind of why we're celebrating it right now after wrestling season's over. But he got the wrestling coach of the year. Jim ran his 100th marathon, which is a huge deal. So, and he just ran the top of Utah yesterday, well, Saturday.
It was 103.
Yeah, 103 right now. So,
did you win?
No, I didn't, but I think so.
That is a win, right?
That's a win. So, and Bill.
Beat my wife by 10 seconds.
Oh, good.
And that's it. Knowing
you're
not killing also. And Dave Isom ran his 50th on Saturday. And Bill Emmett ran and beat Jim.
By 8 minutes. Bill's 60 years old, and he ran at 3:36, qualified for Boston.
So he's going to go to the Boston Marathon. He's still in it. So. Yeah, we've got pretty awesome faculty. And then the last couple of weeks, I'm sure you guys have heard, we have 9 National Merit Scholarships.
And there are how many in the state of Utah?
I know in the Valley, there's no...
There's 1,800 in the nation.
Okay. We've got 9 of them. Wow. And did Skyview have any? I know Mountain Crest had none. I don't know.
Skyview had a couple.
2 maybe?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's pretty.
Kelly, did they have any? This is Kelly Cannon, by the way, from Harold.
Oh, Kelly.
I wrote the board without that.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so it's like, that's very exciting. Yeah. In fact, Jim said that Mountain Crest, I guess, called saying, what are you guys doing? How are you getting your.
Yeah, so we shared that with them, actually, because we invite our top sophomores to take that test. And then we notify how they did it.
Do you think those other tests that have been started, of course, that's ACT prep, not SAT prep.
They are similar, though. Yes, mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway, so that's very exciting. We have 8 staff members pursuing advanced degrees. U.S. News and World Report ranked Logan High number 6 in the state, which is very exciting as well. The dress code, dun 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 dun.
Yay.
We have over 1,700 students, and we've had like seriously half a dozen issues. It was just, I think, made into a bigger issue than it was, but it's like just been a huge reminder, I think, to Shane and Jim and I what a fabulous student body we have. That out of all those students, we've had really a small handful of them that we've had a problem with. And we've asked them to change, and they have. And I haven't seen anyone in my office for 2 weeks. So it's pretty neat. We've got a great student body.
I had one today. Sorry.
Oh.
You just ruined our 2 weeks.
Ruined that. Yeah, and now I'm like known valley-wide. Everywhere I go is, what are you wearing today? Are you meeting
with this? Are you wearing high heels?
Yeah, the heels. The heels. Everyone checks out my shoes. Everywhere I go, I'm like, yeah. So, yeah, and the parent that wrote the letter to the editor was a mother.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a father. So a lot of people need clarification on that. So, anyway, it was interesting. And then just kind of the thank you to our students. They've been fabulous at most games. Most of our football games, our soccer games, our volleyball games.
You gave them a big plug the other night on the TV.
We've got
TDS 200 pounds, just
200. So we give two Fridays ago. It was at the tennis team. We let the kids out 5 minutes early to eat all popsicles, just as kind of a thank you, because we really do have a great student body and want to let them know that. So they're a few of our celebrations.
And I don't think our kids get to hear that enough. No, I don't think they get to hear how wonderful they are, because generally everything that makes the press is going to be isolated to, you know, National Merit Scholars, or it's going to be isolated to a handful of kids that are upset with the dress code policy that we have always had and stuff like that. But as a whole student body, I don't think they get to hear how great they are. And so that's another one of our focuses, is we want to reinforce those positive things that they're doing with positive things so that we can continue to do those. And, you know, everybody else had different assignments, and so I got to be the lone person. I was the lucky one that got to hand out 1,700 popsicles. Which we still have a box, so if you want a popsicle, come on over. But it was so much fun just watching the kids come out. And, you know, I'll bet we only had maybe 1,200 that actually came out to get popsicles. But I would say that almost every single one of them said, thank you, Mr. Ogden. I mean, to me, that's remarkable that our student body have those manners. That, you know, it was a silly, 15-cent popsicle. And yet they were grateful for it. And they were able to convey that and to share that with us, which made me want to do it again for them. You know, because I think, as Jill said, every day we are astounded at what great students we have. And I have to keep that as our constant reminder that, you know, we've got 1,700 kids between our various campuses. And they are all just fantastic. And that's something that we just don't celebrate enough. So we want to continue to celebrate. Our kids are the best part of our jobs.
And then I had one more that wasn't on our handout, but I had a few of the coaches and our students even comment on Brad Hilton and Samantha Winder. She's our new athletic trainer with Brad, and they have done a fabulous job. The kids are very impressed with those two. I've watched them at our football games and our soccer games and the volleyball games, and and even our tennis team, they have been fabulous for our athletes and go out of their way and spend long hours. And Samantha's just in an actual baby in a couple months. But anyway, it's
concerned.
they've been wonderful, and we've been pretty darn lucky to have those two on board, because they take good care of our athletes.
At least simplified for Brad to have.
I would agree. And even one of our soccer team games last week, we had a person on the opposing team get hurt, one of the players, and Brad took care of her. And I mean, it was just, I was really proud to be at Grizzly. So anyway, they do a fabulous job, and that was another celebration we just wanted you guys to be aware of. So.
And she's also helping, as she's gotten Emily's qualification, so she's actually teaching and assisting Ian some concurrent enrollment classes.
Yes, she is.
Wow.
Yep.
So it's just added to our opportunities for our students to learn the health sciences.
Mm-hmm. Well, the hospital's commented that it's a really good partnership. They're really enjoying it.
She's actually an employee of Cash Hospital.
Cash Valley Hospital.
Cash Valley Hospital. I knew it was a special one, but assigned us a minimum of 50%.
And then she does, and she goes out and does education in other places too. So it's a great.
And I know with her class, she's completed a pathway to Bridgeland. So
And they've got good medical
right
stuff.
So there we've had some great things happen with this additional trainer we've got.
Sorry, we went over our time.
That's
great. Yeah, we're going to make you over a little bit more. How are things in the hall and kids getting in class and that sort of thing going well?
I believe so. You know, as an administrative team, I know that our goal is to try and be out there during passing periods, aware of the areas that maybe don't have as much surveillance already in them or don't have the cameras there, and trying to be active in those areas. And since you brought it up, that's one of the elements that one of our responsive school teams came up with as well. And from the teachers, they are trying to put forth an effort among themselves to say, it's important that we as the educators be in the hallway during passing periods, that we be out there to monitor it. And we know that there will be a student that stays after that needs help or something, but it shouldn't be an everyday theme. And so it's always amazing when that happens, rather than the principal saying, you're supposed to be out in the hallway during passing periods, when you've got a responsive school team that is making that recommendation from within themselves and saying, guys, this is something we need to do. I think so. I know that as we are out in the hallways, we've just discussed what our procedure is going to be. One thing that we're really trying to look at is, do we have a systematic approach to things? And we have not had one for kids that we find in the hallway. And so, you know, we're kind of discussing, what does that look? Does it have to be more than just hurry and get to class? Maybe it's something where we need to escort them there. And Jim's a great example of being able to take a kid there, minimally disrupt the class, but get the kid right in it and working and set the expectations for that student before they even hit the classroom door. While they're walking to the class and saying, here's what I want you to do. Here's the expectation. You're going to go in, you're going to establish what you're doing and sit right down and get to work. And so, you know, I think that that's something that we're working at as a whole new administrative staff is making sure that we know what our systematic procedures are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Aren't they, according to the attendance policy, aren't they truant if they're not in class within?
There's a tardy and there's a late tardy that fall into that. And so it would be depending upon what their reasoning is for being in the hallway. If they're loitering, then it could fall under a truancy. Yeah.
You know, I know we're about done, but part of that responsive school team is going to look at positive behavior intervention support, PBIS.
Right, instead of just negative.
And that's really what I want to look at is, what can we do to encourage kids to get into class, and what can we do positively when they're not, instead of giving them a transition. I'd like to see what system we can get in place is positive instead of punitive.
And have you talked to that guy at Utah State that's over UBI? What's his name? That's over at Utah State.
You're talking about the survey?
No.
Richard West?
No.
No.
UBI taking work again.
Are you talking about this guy from Australia?
No, he's...
He's
at Utah State. What's his name?
We could probably just make up a name.
It was John Bacon.
I would recognize it if you said it.
And we are in homecoming week, which has been good. I've been able to go out with Grizz and the cheerleaders. We have one more school. We have Woodruff tomorrow at lunch.
My first grader told me all about it.
It was so fun, and the kids love to have the bookmark. We have a bookmark with Griswold. And actually, today was kind of neat because Anthony Johnson, who was the first Griswold when I came, was able to be there just to kind of watch his protege working on it. So it was fun to have him there. This Wednesday, are you going to be able to drive? Okay, you got signs.
I have the signs.
Okay, I knew somebody did. Because I couldn't find them in my
I have the signs in my basement.
All right, so we'll have the signs and we'll be with you.
Great.
What time?
It's going to be fun.
It starts at 6, so we need to be there at
5:30.
Right by the Herald Journal. offices.
Thanks for what you're doing.
Oh, you bet.
Thank appreciate you. It.
Great.
Right. Love it.
All of you.
For having a ball.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And how do I log on to your Facebook account?
Do you have a Facebook account?
I'm on my Facebook account right now.
You just do a search for Logan High School Administration.
I did, and it said there was no such account. Yeah, it did find
get it. Get you set up
there
for
I tried to have people like, how
have them like you or whatever.
How do you advertise that? You can't suggest that they like that page.
If you like it, the best advertising is if you like it, then all your friends see that, hey, she likes the Logan High School Administration.
So you can't go to your friends and suggest that they like that page.
No, you can always just post in there, though, and say, hey, I just liked Logan High School Administration, whatever you go.
I'm not Aunt Gary's friend on Facebook.
No, you didn't wish me happy birthday today.
Oh, it's your birthday.
Today's your birthday.
It is my birthday.
It is your birthday.
Brett, do you want to
start I have that written in my planner.
No, I was just...
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, you're going to sing happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ann. Happy birthday to you.
Before you leave today, we do have a little bit of a treat.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
39 today.
Well, now we have how many that like
it? Actually, I turned the age that I've been telling people I was on their
own. 36 followers on Facebook.
That is quite
the problem.
Yes, so anyway.
Okay. Okay, our next will be our report on the Dibbles reports, and we'll Marshall.
Just before I turn it over to Dave, for the last X number of years, we've been using the Dibbles in our elementary schools for a more focused examination of our literacy needs, our reading needs. That's a K-5 process. When I first came, we were in a situation where we were doing most of that by hand. We would be able to give the test, but the actual analysis of that data came to a lot of pick and shovel work. They try to put it into Excel sheets, and we got very adept at doing that, but it was very, very time-consuming and with a lot of man-hours. For this year, we've been able to work. Dibbles is now a requirement by the state as our intervention process to be able to determine where we are with our K-3 reading. We still have a K-5, but the M-class Dibbles next process is allowing us to have an amazing level of in-depth assistance for teachers with their students. It's basically three times a year on the large test, and you'll see it throughout. Boy capitalized, it's not boy, it is beginning of year. Then there's MOY, which is middle of year, and then there's YOY, which is end of year. So we have the process, and we have the ability of linking into past years. Because we have started in a new process, we're still trying to download our old data into this system to see if they can talk. So for right now, our beginning of year data is what we have. But we wanted to spend just a little bit of time with you to share what our elementary teachers are experiencing and learning this year in terms of how to get data from the assessments that they've been given.
I didn't create most of this. Sarah Taylor actually sent this presentation to me on Saturday because I called her Friday night and said, doing a presentation for our board on Monday and would like to share a little bit about the data process that we've been in. And she sent this information, so this would help accommodate our meeting. So this was allowed to edit this however I needed. So far in our district, professional development on this new Dibbles program, the coaches were trained as part of the startup process, so every coach at every school came to a training. Carrie Curtis facilitated that because she was part of the pilot last spring at Bridger Elementary and in depth learned all the tools and how they work and what the coaches would need to be aware of going into the use of the program with their staffs. So that's where we started there.
Last week on September 11th, we had a training here from the company with all of the coaches and all of the administrators. Coaches remained afterwards with that trainer and went into depth on looking at our actual data that they already have, this beginning of year data. So they weren't training on information that the company was doing a demo or something. They used their actual data to get in and look at information and see how these reports work and what we want to be looking at. So that was last week's process. They were scheduled to be here until about 2:30, and the coaches went back to their schools at 1 because that's how good our coaches are. That's where they're at in this process. They really know what they're doing with it. And this is, we've had a vision of what we could do with DIBELS. We've had a vision of what we needed as far as tools, and this is the tool, I think, that finally has met our vision. And coaches were very excited to have something that could do that. This is a map provided by the company. It's kind of fancy, but if you follow it around, the top is defined vision. We've done that as a district. This number 2 in green is assessing students. We've done that for years now. That's not something that we needed training on. We know what we're doing with that. Number 3 in the pink, understanding assessment results. Again, we've done that for years, but most of the assessment results we get are post-mortem kinds of things. It's way after the fact. By the time we were analyzing our data at best, we were getting it 6 to 8 weeks later, and teachers could look at that and tear it apart in a data discussion and say, this is what happened, but it was too late to do anything about it. So that's another difference you'll see here. Number 4, using the results to plan instruction. This is where we're at as a district. We've never had this opportunity before, and this is where our focus on our training will be, is how do we take what we have and use it now to benefit the instruction over the next few weeks. And literally from week to week, how do we benefit instruction with the information we have? And then we'll need to learn how to manage the outcomes based on this new approach. This is a guide for implementation that the company also provides for us. It goes through two sections, really. On the left-hand side here are the administrative, how you do the benchmark tools. We benchmark 3 times a year with DIBELS, beginning, middle, and end. That's why Marshall was pointing that out to you. And there's specific ways to use those assessments. We know how to do that. That's something we've done for years. We understand what they're for. Again, it's just the timeliness of the information being made available to us. The other side is the progress monitoring. Again, we've been involved in that process. We understand it. We know what to do with the progress monitoring data. But we've never had this amount of data so readily available to us on each student. So this will be the training piece again for us as a district as we go into it. This is a completely web-accessed program. This is the login page and what it looks like when you go there as a teacher or as an administrator. You simply log into it and it brings us to our account. The account can be accessed through an iPad. It can be accessed through a student computer. Anything that will reach the internet will allow us to get on to the DIBELS and do testing or work through some of the things. You'll see some of our tools that are available here. We are piloting some things at Bridger again this year. I used some of the Title I funds I had at the end of the year. I was looking at some online library options and things, and this was all in the package. So I went ahead and committed those funds at Bridger for this, for the purpose of seeing where we could go with some of these other tools that tie the assessment to the learning activities that need to occur with those students. And it's essentially, instead of going to the level library room to find that level library book, it's embedded, and it's just part of what they give to you. So we'll see how that works out at Bridger and give you more reports as we go through the year. But that's the first reading that you see down there at the bottom of the left-hand column there. DIBELS Next is what all the schools have, and we have the some of the 3D tools that allow us to analyze where students are at. And I'm going to go through this next part rather quickly because I think you would like to see our data and what it looks like. So this will just be a quick overview of what the program looks like, and slow me down if you need to slow me down. But classroom web reports, this is what a teacher would see if they went in to look at their class. And you can see beginning of year, middle of year, end of year results for this particular class that are being highlighted, as well as those funny looking graphs, the blue lines with the circles around them. That's a mini icon for that student's progress monitoring chart. So if you have a student that needed progress monitoring, notice it's not on the student on the top line because it's all green dots up there. The next line down, that student made progress throughout the year, so they have a progress monitoring chart that, that accompanies that.
Why is one a DORF and one an MWF?
That would be based on the assessment, and what that would be what they started working on.
Okay.
So it's very individualized as a result as well. So this is a close-up of that. You can see that in a little bit more detail, but that's really what that's all about. Then this is one of the things I love about this now. Not only do we get instant access to the results on our students, but this small group advisor, it's part of what they call their Now What tools. So you have the data, now what do you do with it? That's the thinking there. This small group advisor immediately groups students based on need. It says this is what they scored low in, this is what you should teach them in the next couple of weeks, and here's where we suggest you put them into a group to do that.
And they may be coming in and out at different times.
They can change every week. If you progress monitored every week and it gave you a new result on this is where to go now, they would group them differently.
The goal is to get them from that upper left-hand corner to there all the way to the lower right. That's the goal of getting everyone to that lower right, which means if they're on grade level, on target, everything's good.
This takes two of their major points in their DIBL score, the accuracy on one axis and their fluency on the other axis. And with those combined scores, it groups them according to those needs and makes some specific suggestions on their responses. So it's a very useful tool that way. With that, if I really got into this, there's a parent letter component to this, and we will have to do some work with teachers to get them up to speed on this. But I could actually send out, based on what the report said, a report to parents saying, this is what we'll be working on the next few weeks in reading with your child. This is what I would like you to work on at home, and it's all prepared.
You don't have to type anything up.
You just print it and send it. That's all you, you put it in the backpack, and on it goes. This is more of that report and what it would look like coming home to parents. And here's the following. This is the last page where Jimmy needs support, and it just goes through some information to give the parents some background on how to support their child. So moving on from that, that's a great piece too if we can get the teachers up to speed on how to use that. Now we get into the reports and what the analysis looks like. There are just all kinds of reports available in here. We'll want to look at, are we using the system correctly? There's a fidelity report as well as these others. Again, we get back to our homepage here. We click on where it says reporting. That's what that's pointing to up there. And forgive this, it's an old slide, but it gives you the idea. Many different kinds of reports. There's actually many more than this now available in the program. We'll be looking at some comparison reports right now. It shows when it comes out, this will show a grade for a school or a school or the whole district compared. We'll look at all of that together here in just a minute. The main thing this was showing was how the reports are made up. And along with these preset reports that are in the system, a teacher could go in or an administrator could go in to these side panels and pull any of the what they call drawers out of the side panel and change the report to look for something very specific if they would like to. Those are some of the reporting icons. They come up in
in the different reports as headers. And then we get into options where we could save and send reports. If Marshall wanted to have the principals look this up and then email him their version of this report, he could have them do that. Marshall likes to play with this a lot, though, so I think he's way ahead of where the principals would go to with all this. And this is more like the reporting table and the different kinds of reports that you would build from. But you can see there's a variety of things there that we would look at.
It simplifies it for principals, so if I'm doing a school-wide, a faculty versus a grade level.
Actually, if you hover on any one of those reports, a bubble pops out and says, this is what this report is for. It answers questions like, and it gives a list of the questions that that report would answer for you as a principal. This is, again, what the reports will look like. The red part of the line is the percentage of students at your school that are in need of immediate intensive services. The yellow part of the line are the students that need some of your interventions and things to bring them up to speed. They're getting there, but they're not quite there yet. If they're in the green part of the line, they are at benchmark for that part of the year. And that's how it judges them as it goes along. So there's a close-up of what that looks like as well. You'll see all the different kinds of reports that come out of this. These are all the pieces of DIBELS that we test on, so they can break out reports by DIBELS as well as by every other kind of thing. And you'll see that in just a minute as we get into our data. If a teacher gets to the point of looking at one of those lines and they say, okay, I want to see all of my kids that are in red right now. They click on the red line, it would open up this screen and show them every student in their class and where they're at in those rankings, why they ended up with that score. And then you can further click on the student and get some more information. So now, these are reports that I put together based on just a few minutes with the program, going in and just pulling these out. This is our current school district data. So this first report is all of the schools and how they did overall in their composite scores. So at a glance, you can see where we're at. The majority of the kids are at benchmark by their grade level. But we have a variety of kids in intensive need. Bridger has the most kids in intensive need. Wilson has the least.
And what's the date of this?
That happened the first week in September.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
So this is very current. All of this is first week in September data. Something that's never occurred before.
We can track the improvement now on basically on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, we really, it's meant to be a formative tool, and it's meant to be used that way.
Is this K3, 1-3?
No, this is K5.
K5.
So by grade, and if we look at this, this is the whole district by grade now. So the thing that jumped out to the administrators last week as we got into training, that third line down is second grade. 79% of the second graders in our district are at benchmark for reading today.
We have great teachers.
So we really are in a great place starting the year. If you're a second grade teacher, it's like, ooh, that's great. Now they just need to keep them there and work on those few that aren't quite there. The other grade levels, look at kindergarten. They have the most work to do, which is what you would expect. But that's, at a glance again, where our district is by grade level.
But it's so interesting that it jumps back again to fifth grade.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Always.
It is. That. Now, these are side-by-side comparisons, not really on purpose, just so I didn't have to do 200 slides for you. This is Wilson and Bridger, and this is by grade at Wilson and Bridger. So you can see at a glance the difference between those two schools. It's kind of neat to actually see a side-by-side this way. But Bridger was, again, our most challenged schools based on the result, and Wilson was our least challenged school based on those initial results. And this is where that lands us. And you can see, again, even at Bridger, in fact, Bridger's second grade's doing better than Wilson's second grade at this point.
just really quick. There's Adams and Hillcrest side by side. Adams second grade has almost 100% of their students at Benchmark.
Wow.
Remember the demographics that go with this.
Yes, yeah. And transient.
This is Ellis and Woodruff side by side by grade level. Now,
the fourth grade at Ellis has a challenge.
Yes, a big challenge for fourth grade. In fact, that's one of the bigger challenges
throughout
the whole district right there. Now we're looking at it by teacher. So if I'm a principal, I could go in and very quickly see every one of my classes. I can see how their class tested and how the makeup turned out. One of the things that jumped out to me on this immediately was looking at Diane Iverson's class, second grade Bridger, and she has no students in the yellow and only one student, it turns out, that's in the red.
And so, she only taught them for a week, so she can't claim it.
Well, exactly. But then the other piece of that is there was definitely move in and move out. She's down to 14 students today.
Wow.
And that she was intended to have over 20, but she's at 14 students today because of how that population is at Bridger and how fast they move from place to place. She just happened to have the group of kids that moved out. So that's what's happening there. But you can go through this. As a principal, I would really love to see a chart like this. It gets me a really quick glance, and I can zoom right in on where my needs are, which grade level, which class. This is Adams and Hillcrest.
Well, it would also help you as a teacher to be able to say, this is where my kids were when they came in, and look at what we've done.
Yeah.
Because if you realize you have a real challenge.
This kind of data will probably tie into a value-added approach eventually, mm-hmm. saying, okay, where did you take it? What did you mm-hmm. do with it? Look at Adams here. The first line there has no red. And the about the fifth line down has no red. I don't know what grade level or which teachers those are, but that was interesting.
So if you have a teacher like that who has, let's say their line is all green by the end of the school year, and they start out.
That's what we want to see.
Okay, but they start at the beginning of the year, they had nobody in the red. A couple in the yellow, and everybody else was green. You can't really show that teacher did a great job by that line because she had a great group to begin with.
They can because of the way the process goes, there's an expected increase. So if their kids, if they're flat, that will show that there's not been the improvement. But if they're continuing
that
to go
also
higher,
just be
Robin has a comment.
So then I think the important thing at this point in this juncture is having a conversation about resources and time.
Well, that's what
when you went back two screens to look before, and there was a teacher that had over 50% of them in the red. Mm-hmm. If their counterpart teacher is the one that has all green kids, or all green and yellow, that seems like a huge difference for two reasons. One would be the aid and the resources, but I also think it makes a compelling argument to say, at the grade level, you need to be thinking about your power hour and how teachers can support teachers, because If I have 16 of my kids that aren't reading and 14 that are, and my teacher in the classroom next to me has all of the kids reading, you've got to think about how you're approaching that as a team, and that's where those team discussions.
One of the main recommendations for using this report is exactly that, where to put your resources. But I also, Marshall went to a training last week that I think is important to bring out. Marshall, the Dibbles presentation you heard, made a big caution about how we use data like this. And using it as a, this teacher's a good teacher, that teacher's, that's not the way to use this data.
I know we won't. I just worry about the state doing that.
Well, the state has their own method, and that's involved with state testing. And this is not to...
They're very aware of that same discussion. There is a process that they are looking at working with Devil's Next to get to more of a... How could this potentially be used for progress of a teacher over time? But it right now does not mesh into how the state is looking at growth over time.
This is a formative. This is a formative assessment tool. So this is not a end of level type of approach. And we have to make sure we say that over and over.
The biggest problem, USOE understands that. Our legislature does not.
And the legislatures, unfortunately, are making this decision.
Right.
Now, school reports by ethnicity is here. And this is the school district by ethnicity. We start with the American Indian line as the top one, followed by Asian.
And with the numbers on the side, you can see what the total numbers are.
Black or African American. The blue line, blue numbers down the side tell you how many students we have that fit in that category. And I apologize, it's kind of fuzzy because of how I had to pull these out of the internet, and internet-based stuff never shows well. So that's just the way that is. Looks good on the computer.
But it's not my eyes.
It's not your eyes. So if it's looking fuzzy, it is fuzzy. We have multiracial as a line there. Our Latino Hispanic is below the black or African American. Native Hawaiian or other is the third from the bottom there. Not applicable is one group. We actually had 16 students that could not be defined by ethnicity in our system. Don't know how that happens, but we'll work on that. And then our white students are the last group, and we have the majority, which is 1,900 students fit into the white student category, so about two-thirds out of our groups here. So that's the district at a glance. Looking at that for by race or ethnicity here, your Asian group is doing the best, followed or tied with your white group, and then the concerns are our American Indian group there and our Hispanic, Latino, pretty much all of our minority groups are concerned on that front. This is by school, so the same report now broken down by school again. It's interesting to see some differences there. At Wilson, we had two students that were Hawaiian natives or Pacific Island. One student tested in the red, the other student tested in the yellow. So that's why that line looks that way at Wilson. On our black or African American, we also have two students. One student tested in the red, and one student tested in the green at Wilson. So that's how that report came out. But you have to be aware of those numbers as you're looking at these percentages in charts. You can't just look at it and say, Wilson didn't have much growth. Look at that percentage there, half and half. That's not the way to look at it. You really have to see what the count is over on the right there. Adams and Hillcrest looking at ethnicity.
The non-applicable one in Adams really isn't doing well.
Yeah, non-applicable, the one non-applicable student.
Or look at the Asians, the three.
Yeah, the three Adams. Asians are all 100% at Adams.
And the American Indian at Hillcrest.
There you go, the one American Indian. And we could talk about these because we have no idea who those students are, but that's part of what we're looking at here. Here's Ellis Woodruff, and it's two American Indians at Ellis, all both in the green. So. So anyways, that's by ethnicity. Here's student reports and what they tend to look like. Again, Iverson's class sparked my interest, so I drilled down just to see what her class makeup would look like by ethnicity, and that's the chart on the left here. And then just for fun, I pulled up Polly Chug's class at third grade at Bridger by ethnicity to see how that, and that's more of a balanced look of what you would see if you were a teacher looking at your class by ethnicity, is what you see in Polly Chug's class. Then while I was on Polly Chug's class, I hit the small group advisor to see how they would say to group her class, and that's where her students, that's one click on the program, and the teacher's into, okay, this is how to group my students for the next couple weeks. And this is, and
going further into the Now What tools, it actually gives you advisories on what to do with those students. It's not just simply putting them into a group. And I don't have a picture of the activities that it lists out, but that is part of it. This is what an individual student report looks like. I've blacked out the student name up in the top left there. But you can see this is a third grade student, and it's showing me where their DIBELS scores, specific DIBELS scores, fell across the grade levels. So I can see at a glance that this student, where they are in their DIBELS across grade levels from this report.
So this did bring in, we were able to import their
Years.
No, this is just based on the one test.
Okay.
Now, when we import the rest of the data from former years,
why does it have something with kindergarten, first grade, second grade?
I'm not sure. It shouldn't be there.
Okay, that's what we're wondering about.
No, I everything we have is what's in the colored numbers. I believe those are the benchmarks for those grade levels, but I'd have to go back and check.
I think you're right.
It looks like benchmark numbers to me. This is DIBELS by grade. So this is how the schools did on their DIBELS by grade. So if I go, or no, this is how the district did by grade. So as I go through the kindergartners across the district, this is how they performed in their first sound fluency, is that second line. And the composite score is all of the DIBELS tests combined, how the kindergartners look across our district. This is first grade's picture here, and that gets into some more detail. The nonsense word fluency is the area that we look at, the two lines at the bottom there for first grade. That's what we focus on at this time of year. Second grade, we start getting into a focus on the what's called the DORF now, which is DIBELS Oral Reading Fluency. Notice it does fluency, accuracy, and retail. All three are areas that we look at there. So second grade, again, is doing very well. Third grade, we have some challenges. The challenges with third grade are accuracy and fluency, not comprehension as much. So they're understanding what they're reading, but they don't sound very good as they're reading.
The days is something that starts in this way.
Yeah.
And what is that?
The days is a test they do by hand, and they're looking at some comprehension there as well.
So we're getting a little bit more in depth in comprehension starting in third grade.
They're hoping to have the days be something. The days has to be hand entered right now, third through fifth. But we're hoping it'll be something on the iPads next year, so that's coming along. This is fourth grade, and then fifth grade. So you can see there's multiple ways of looking at our student data. I also pulled some subgroups. I didn't want to belabor this any more than we already have, so you will see English language learners, economic disadvantaged, socioeconomic disadvantaged, and special ed listed side by side for the district here. So it's very small. But this is by school. So again, it's each school name, and it shows as you go across, you can compare those three groups. With the economic disadvantaged in the middle. At this point, you're just looking for the colors of the lines and seeing if there's a lot of red or a lot of something else. As expected, our special ed is showing a lot of red over there on the right. Our economic disadvantaged is not showing as much red as I expected. From former reports, I was expecting to see a lot more red there than is there. Doesn't mean there aren't challenges there, but it's not as much. Of all the schools, Bridger has the biggest amount of the economic disadvantaged in the red there. And then our English language learners are by far the most needy group outside of special ed. So that gives us some attention to that issue. Now this is the subgroups by grade. So starting with kindergarten at the top line and running through fifth grade at the bottom line, you can see across the different groups how that goes by grade. Again, our English language learners are struggling a lot, and it increases as you go up the grade levels in our schools. So when you're getting to a third, fourth, and fifth grader who's an English language learner, they are really struggling in our schools right now. And that is mirrored by the special ed on the right. And again, poverty does not seem to be as big a factor with this as we would have thought.
Even though we're high poverty.
Even though we're high poverty. And I would attribute that to some great teaching that's been going on and some real focus on that the last few years. So then you wouldn't think of this maybe, but by ethnicity. We have English language learners or subgroups by ethnicity. Look at the variety of ethnicity results for our English language learners on the right. And that's, again, all different ethnicities represented there. Ethnicities by economic disadvantage and ethnicities by special education in our district currently. So you can see there's just multiple ways to look at the data. All of this data is something you can click on any one of those lines and it will take you right to those students. You can click on any student and see their exact report, and all of this was available immediately on completing testing.
Of course, it was in the computer, and which most of it was done literally as they were, it was that it was available, that was that quick.
So along with the other tools, we'll explore some of that later in the year, and I went 2 minutes over, Marshall, but there's a presentation on where we're at with this.
Any questions?
Great job. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.
The work between both Robin's area and Dave's to get this going has been really, really good. We appreciate both departments.
And we're doing diagnosis instead.
That's what we're trying to do. That's absolutely what we're trying to do. Great meetings with principals at the startup of the year. Robin and I were able to talk through the issues we had with the current DIBELS assessment we were doing, responsiveness being the number one issue. We could not, we called the company over the summer, and we were waiting 8 weeks later still for a response from the company. This company, I call Friday night during family time, and she sends me an email the next day for the presentation and gives me everything I need. That's been the experience from the start of the year.
Okay, we'll next have a report on the Utah Mathematics 4 course progression. Marshall?
One of the things that you know that we're going to be focusing in on this year as we talked in June is to really spend a time with our community, our parents, with a better understanding of the new Utah course, specifically in mathematics and in regards. What we'd like to do today is to share with you what is occurring within our district in terms of the secondary mathematics. It is much different in terms of terminology. We no longer have pre-algebra, we no longer have algebra, geometry, and algebra 2. The process we've gone to, though, allows for a stronger level of rigor. We're based upon the international model. It is an opportunity for us to actually have stronger focus on mathematics, but it is new. And in that newness, it has stressed some parents out because the process at home is now different. Homework is different. Their ability to help is different. So we want to make sure that we are helping and giving support to our schools and to our community, our parents, through this transition process. This is our second year. And with that, we'll turn the time over to Robin, and she's got some information for you and what we've been doing.
I think we'll make up for the 2 minutes. No worries, Dave. I need to talk to the microphone for the recording.
It would be helpful.
We have it there. There's an awful lot of the discussion that I'm going to defer to Joyce, Michelle, and Monson, because they've been an integral part of leading these conversations. But all of you a couple years ago would have gotten copy of this. There's two pages.
if you'll take this one. This was a suggestive progression from the state of Utah as we adopted the Common Core.
And you do have the progression that we have, our district's progression. So this is showing the state's portion of it. Mm-hmm.
If you remember, too, the first two components of the new Utah Common Core for mathematics actually speak to students' ability to problem solve as well as persevere with problems. And it's interesting because as we move forward, the issue that I think was the unmanned issue that wrote into the paper is there was a perception that some of the more rigorous classes had just gone away. And so it was a simple conversation to have with students and with parents about what actually is contained in CCS 1, 2, and 3. And it is not that we're not teaching algebra, it's that it's an approach that's integrated, and it is an approach that asks kids to be very rigorous in being able to solve problems as well as persevere. But as a district, we moved forward with this progression last year, and what they were finding at the middle school is that we still had a group of students that were considered very high-end mathematics students, that we grappled with the idea and the question of what do we offer to our students. So we had our tracks, if you remember, we showed you those tracks, and yet we still had a group of students that we needed to talk about and discuss. And so we came together, both the high school and the middle school. We also had Diana Sedris, and we had Craig, Diana Sedris, by the way, is from USOE, and she is a mathematics specialist in the state, as well as we asked Craig Ashton, who represented Cache County, to talk to us about their issues and concerns that they were seeing, both from the parent side and the student side. So I'm going to ask both Mike, Michelle, and Joyce to come up and talk for just a minute about that. You do have a copy of this, but I'm going to give you a hard copy of the progression. And one of the things that I would have you look at with that is that where we landed with these discussions, we do feel confident that we're meeting the needs of both students. However, my perception is that we still have ongoing conversations to be had. For example, we didn't fully answer the question about how are we defining who gets into those classes and doesn't get into those classes. And we did discuss some of the tests that could be possibly given to students. We talked about teacher recommendations. We talked about a lot of different choices that may be available. But my point being that my perception is that we're still very fluid in those conversations and how we intend to take care of the idea behind the Common Core, which we embrace and fully support, and also then looking to say what is it the local district needs to do to take care of the students. So the other handout I'm going to give you, and then if three of you want to come forward, you know, Mike, you've got to be gone in a couple minutes, so I'll let you talk first, is I do have a copy from the state of the high ability students from the Mathematics Common Core that contains information that I think will be relevant for you as a board member to know. All right, Mike, you're up first.
Okay. Maybe I'll just walk through a little bit of a historical part of it, because we've grappled with this for a long time. We recognize that there are students that are well beyond their peers, and so what do you do to help those students and keep motivation? Because we do have that gifted or high-end students that we're just as concerned about as we are with our special ed and ESL students that Dave was just talking about. So a lot of this transition took place a year ago as we took an honors program out of the sixth grade and just taught all of our sixth grade students the regular math sixth core. So we kind of made that transition. Our teachers worked really hard to differentiate so that they had various levels of questions and things for the students to kind of help meet their needs. Part of the work that was done by our sixth grade teachers and Michelle Hatch was to come up with a textbook that would work to help with the differentiating, but also to teach that core subject. So this year, that hasn't been as much of a discussion with parents and families as it was a year ago. and we kind of crossed that hurdle. The decision that we made was to go ahead and begin an honors program in the 7th grade and the 8th grade that would help those kids start kind of in that honors track through Logan High School. I went through with you this afternoon the test scores from those 8th grade honors students from a year ago. It's very consistent over the last 4 or 5 years that nearly every one of those students score in that 4 range, no matter what the test is that we're giving them. So it's partly because of good instruction, but partly because these are just kids that are ready to take off and go. Joyce can talk a little bit because we've kind of worked with this over a number of years of how to identify those students so that they really are our top students, our AP students when they get over to Logan High School. And we went through a little period where we really tried to open the idea of gifted a little bit more than what we had. And I think as they went over to Logan High School, the feedback we got was that a lot of them were very well prepared, but there were some that weren't. And so then we were maybe doing a disservice to some of those students. So the trick is identify those really top students, but also give avenues for other students to catch up and be part of that track later on. And I think over the last...
been really good.
Yeah, the last 4 or 5 years, I think it's been pretty spot on. And the one thing that is helpful for us in the current tracking system is that we should have a pretty good handle on those students because all of our 6th grade students take the same core. So our teachers within the building should have a pretty good feel for who those students are versus, you know, trying to identify from 6 or 7 different elementary schools and bring them in. I will say that even with those 5th grade teachers coming from all those different schools, it was pretty, you know, it was pretty accurate and gave us that opportunity. But I think it's even a little bit more solid now. And so that's kind of the track that we've taken identify those students. And that's the question that has come up most with parents is they're worried that as 6th graders they're not going to be challenged, and so, you know, I don't want them just feeling like they have to hold on until they're in 7th grade to get a challenge. And I think our 6th grade math teachers have really done a great job of trying to fill in some of those gaps and meet the needs. And as this last year especially, it's been a real transition for them because there were gaps in the curriculum that they had to make up from that whole transition that took place with the math. So that's our side of it. Did I?
John, not yet. I don't know what I needed to say about it. So Joyce, you have anything to say? Do you guys have questions about how that's working?
Well, for your honors, 8. The focus on that would be for them to start in with secondary math 2 as a freshman. Is that the goal?
Yeah.
If by chance you're seeing that that's not the best placement, they could go over to the secondary math 1 honors as a freshman, still being an advanced, but not quite as advanced.
Right.
And again, if you think about the flow map, you really are looking at where do the majority of the kids plan for their instruction, but it still acknowledges that there are going to be those outlier kids that need to have that piece, but to be able to have a choice is really nice because it's not throwing them off track, per se, to still have advanced math and be college bound with this track.
A lot of the discussion we've had as a group, too, is what the curriculum would be for those tracks, because the state recommendation is to take the particular curriculum items and go deeper into those items. We're trying to do that, but there's also this need for some acceleration that goes along with it. And that was the reason for us going to the secondary 1 curriculum as an 8th grader, which
We talked with Darren. And so we figured out they're doing they're doing 1.5 and 1.5. So they're playing that because that made more sense to me to understand.
If you look at the Common Core's website and stuff on their appendix, there is an actual accelerated program. So we're not just making it up and we're not just going, well, we think we'll teach this piece and this piece. piece. So when you look at it, like, there are five or six main topics. So under number sense, for example, seventh grade might have six things that you're supposed to cover. But in the, if you, so for our accelerated teacher, the honors class, it'll say, I'm supposed to teach 7 point this, and then 8.2 and 3 and 4. And then when I do racial proportions, I'm going to cover this part of 7th grade and this part of 8th grade. So he's not guessing and not sure what he's going to cover. Then when they move on to the honors 8th, it's the same thing. It shows you're going to cover 8th grade of this and then secondary math 1 topics. And then it blends nicely into the secondary math 1 honors. And those kids won't have gaps because it's not just a teacher saying, well, I like this the most, so I'm going to spend more time on that. And that's what I'm going to go deeper in. It's a specific integrated curriculum, so there's no guessing about that. And it shouldn't leave any holes for those kids as they progress. And as Mike said, we felt like that was the way we wanted to go because it was accelerated and allowed kids to move faster through that, which is what we've done in the past when we've allowed kids in 6th grade to take pre-algebra or 7th grade to take algebra, and so that by the time they get to Joyce, they are able to take AP stats as a senior and not have to be trying to take 2 math classes at the same time. So the county opted for a little bit different path on that than we did, but we feel good about this, and like I said, I feel really good about it because the Common Core has that segment in it, and we didn't have to guess about what it was that we were going to cover. We would know that we will cover all the things.
And any teacher teaching that would do the same thing.
Yeah, because you just look at that and you go, okay. And I'm trying to encourage the 7th grade honors, because we aren't actually doing the 8th grade honors this year. We just have the 7th grade honors. But I keep encouraging him to not approach it like teach all the 7th grade and then tack on the 8th grade, because I don't believe that that's the intention. I believe the intention is, while I'm working on ratio and proportions, my regular 7th grade class might stop here, but the honors class needs to take it this many steps deeper. So I'm not going to do ratio and proportions, and then in May, I'm going to go back and go, oh, but I got to tack on these things. I really am encouraging him to make it integrated and blend throughout the year. I mean, he's going to have to cover more. He's going to have to go faster, but those kids pick it up faster. So we are trying new books, new core, it's not all new topics to us to teach. We're pretty comfortable with that, but the book itself is a little bit different. The things and the sequencing of it is a little bit different for us. But anyway, that's where I feel like it's going to be a good choice for us to follow that track and allow our gifted kids to have a choice.
Are our current eighth graders still in the old sequence? Transition to the new sequence?
Our current eighth graders this year kind of are in a... it is really different because our, like, really gifted kids are in secondary math 1 honors. The rest of our eighth graders are all in regular eighth grade math. So the challenge for eighth grade teachers this year, for all of us always, but more challenging than has ever been for eighth grade teachers is the huge differentiation of, because typically we've had eighth graders in pre-algebra, eighth graders in algebra, and last year we had eighth graders even in secondary math 1. So we had 3 levels that eighth graders can be in, and this year we only have 2 levels. So you have your real high-end kids with Darren in secondary math 1, and then you have all your rest of your eighth graders that you're trying to teach all the same curriculum. But you have kids in there that are probably this close to being up there, and these kids who are
that close
really,
to being resourced.
Yes, that close to being resourced in the same class. So we just all are trying our best.
Are you envisioning eighth grade having weeks, I mean, getting to the point where there's regular eighth grade math, honors eighth grade math, and then secondary math 1? Or are you transitioning out of secondary
math? I think we'll transition out of secondary math 1 because the current 7th graders that are in honors right now are going to be getting 7th grade math and those pieces of 8th grade math. Then they should transition to 8th grade honors math, which will pick up the 8th grade honors class has fewer eighth grade topics and more secondary math one topics, but you'll have those few pieces that you have to
pick up. This was the bridge this year. Mm-hmm.
This is the bridge year.
And you're, and those honors kids right now are being picked up as doing a traditional algebra course the year before in an honors 7th situation. So they're integrating into this all ideas.
So it will be easier after this year, in other words.
That's right.
It will. And the other discussion that we've had going on here recently is they call that an accelerated math model. We've put it as honors class and on our schedules and our registration. It both shows 7H and 8H, and we felt I think we're all pretty close on this. Is that we felt like publicity wise or answering wise, it's much easier just to talk through an honors program rather than the word accelerated, and the perception that that creates and the desire to have my kids accelerated versus just in an honors program. So it's semantics, but it's
honors
something
that's the same thing but harder.
Yeah.
In reality, this whole process is that our kids, by the time they get to AP practice as juniors, should have a much more rigorous depth of knowledge than what we've been able to have in the past.
I want to be more consistent also.
I can't say that they're not prepared now, though, because they've done such a fine job of getting those kids lined up with, and being in the right place. They're coming in ready to go. So, yeah, the depth of knowledge, maybe the permanency of the content will be announced.
Other questions that
come with
board members?
That's good.
We are blessed in this district with strong mathematics in our secondary, and the cooperation between the two schools. We appreciate the two of you for that coordination. And I know this has not been easy, and thank you, Robin and Mike, and to the high school too, to be able to make this work for kids.
It's vertical teaming. That's what we want.
And I can tell you just from your perspective, though, at least what we've heard at the school level is just died down. We answered a lot of questions a year ago, but I really haven't had it addressed at all this year. I know, I mean, Michelle and I got talked today. I don't think we've had any.
We haven't had a lot of requests to move or any of that.
Yeah.
Well, I think the conversation that still comes up, whether we're talking teachers, administrators, or even parents, is one that we've been having forever, and that is differentiation or remediation. What do we do with those students that are, and not necessarily the students that are failing, but those students that are really struggling, that are maybe getting the D's, but then they can pull the worst each year as they go into more difficult math. So those are conversations that have been going on continually. They haven't stopped. And I think we've reframed it within a new core. But by the same token, that's still very much on all of our minds, and that's where having our U-Star coaches and that attention to differentiation is so powerful.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Our next will be the follow-up on communications.
We'll have Shanna come up and join us, if that's okay.
You bet.
In one of, as we worked with you in June, there's a seat right here. We're really trying to get our message out and have a sensitivity towards more communication, more opportunities for input from our parents, and having them feel to be a part of it is not an honor of the parents, but community. So we're trying to work on a few things. We just wanted to spend a few minutes with you today, kind of on some of the things that have occurred and what we're working on right now. So, Shannon, do you want to kind of chime in on some of the things that we've talked about?
And so you're referring to the Stacyville's conference?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Making sure. I had some conversations with some friends in the communications and marketing departments at the Utah State. And after talking with Marshall, to get the word out to the community about the positive things that are going on in Logan City School District, so we are telling our own story. And wondering if it was appropriate for them to use their classes there at the university for a marketing campaign and a positive PR campaign.
and finally went through a few people and was hooked up with Stacy Hill, who works very closely with these and also with the Huntsman Business College. And she chatted with Mark Marshall. I was not able to be there, and kind of explained what we are looking for, and she kind of has taken the ball and run with it. And they would like to put together a timeline between now and January to work on some things, primarily to have the marketing department and class work to create a logo and merchandise and things like that. We're kind of still fine-tuning kind of what the financial implications of that would be. And then also their PR departments to work with each of the schools to find out good things that are happening and how the principals at each school would like their school to be perceived out in the public. And then finally to have a partnership with the business college and have some of those, I can't remember the exact name that they're called, they're the business scholars, the new incoming freshmen that are in the College of Business, and have them partnership and be volunteering in the schools so that they are have the elementary schools primarily are having connections with the university.
That part came kind of at the end as I talked to Stacy about how many of our students in our district, they know of Utah State, but they don't even see that as something in their future. Physically, they've never been up there. They've physically never been on campus. They've never seen a college campus. And for many of our students whose parents are not involved with the university, they've not had a connection. So we were talking about how neat it would be to be able to have some of our younger kids down in the fourth grade, because the research is showing that really your track of where you're going to be, if you're going to be college bound, is really the foundation time frame in the fourth grade. That's kind of a transition with all of your studies and what you're focusing in on and your abilities. So we just were talking about how neat it would be to get groups of students up to the university, and then also looking at the fact that there are 25,000 students up there plus. How wonderful it would be for them to be role models for our children, our 6,100 students here in our district, on an ongoing basis, so that we would get that a true connection between the university and our district.
And they're often their very neighbors as well. Mm-hmm. The students are living among our students.
And the Huntsman College has taken that as a goal to figure out ways that we can get our kids up earlier. They also we're trying to work with them to help them assist with the one-day university process that the middle school does for their students as well, so that we can get our kids up there and they can get more kids down. They're really looking at almost every college up there has a service component. And what a better service than to come down and work with our kids. We were in the classroom today. You noticed that there were some high school, college kids in there. Part of those students were from the university in terms of level one or level two practicum. We want to get more of their students in our schools. For one thing, is to potentially see that this is where they want to go for their profession. The number of students that are going into the College of Education are not as strong as they need to be. And so with this concerted effort of us working with them and them working with us, so we're excited. Stacy's been, unfortunately, I just found out that they're moving. Her husband got a job at the university back in New York. So they will be moving in December, so we need to figure out the next part of our bridge with her. But her beginning classes we're going to be working with, as well as some of her advanced students, to be able to really allow for our story, each individual school story, to be out. We do have the individual CDs that we were able to do for every school, plus the district. Those are out there. We want to get, again, this community knowing what an amazing resource they have, an amazing jewel they have within the local city school. Any questions you might have?
That's
great. I'm excited to hear that. I've asked her for a more definitive timeline and kind of, as I mentioned, the financial implications of what this campaign that they would put together would be. And I haven't heard back.
We really have not had a logo for a long time, so we're hoping that, you know, this will allow us to have a moniker that's ours, and we're excited about that prospect.
Well, just changing things like our goals that are no longer up in here, that takes time, but if someone can design it for us without us paying for it, and we can do it on our machines rather than having to hire that, that saves so much money.
And this is exciting because this is an opportunity for them to really be in a real life project, and we're excited about that as well.
Great.
Okay. With that, as awesome. You know, we are looking. Dave is looking right now at website opportunities. We know that our websites are lacking, for lacking it for a better word, I guess.
Difficult.
They're challenging. We are trying to put more on our website. If you go there now, Shannon just finished up an analysis of last year's information. We won't get the new information until December, and we'll have a quicker timeline to get it back on. But it shares with them kind of some financial information as well as some demographic information that's available. And so we're hoping as you talk to people and want.
On our webpage now?
On our webpage right now.
It's
not there yet.
I'm asking Dave if you got my email.
We have an email. It just happened Thursday is when we finalized that. So we'll get that on there along with the videos. And again, opportunities for us to talk about ourselves. And tomorrow I have an opportunity of talking with the Cache Valley Morning Rotary about education in general. We'll do some things about the Common Core Utah Core, as well as just a comparison of the districts. I wanted them to see some of the differences in demographics, as well as where our expenditures and funds are, as just an opportunity. Most of the members are live out of in the county, but I thought we could put a point in for us. So I'll be doing that in the morning.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. Okay, our next item is celebrations. Thanks, Shannon. Appreciate it. Marshall?
You know, this one, the high school started with some great things. It's been fun. You saw at the middle school, the different programs that are going. Discovery is up and running again this year in the model very similar to what it was 2 years ago. That has been wonderful. They're working now on the ESL Discovery connection. Again, through Gear Up funding, our private funding that has been working on that for the last few years, has, because of financial challenges of our donor, has not been able to give as much. But we think that we can have a similar program. It won't be quite as big on the ESL's discovery portion, but we're getting those students out into the communities. Last year, we kind of did a partial bridge program. It didn't work as well. With Bryce leaving in the middle of the year, also it just added to the challenge. But they're back to more of a focus that they had 2 years ago.
So what is Eric the one doing?
Eric is mm-hmm. Eric is tied with, and I just forgot the teacher's name is this, the female teachers. But anyway, who Eric is handling the math and science, and she's handling the language arts, and they're tying it more in together. Than they did even with the two of them.
So they'll fit better into the
right. And this is part of Gear Up. This is part of the
so they are part of Gear Up. Okay.
At Hillcrest Elementary School, we will have Eric probably hopefully in January timeframe come and share with you. They have been working with their kids on the 7 habits of highly successful students, and going through that process with their kids. Kindergarten through fifth, so I thought that would be exciting to be able to share with you probably mid-year. All of our elementary schools, their back-to-school nights were well attended. It was neat to see that the parent involvement. It was fun to also see the excitement of the kids as they were coming around, and I've been able to go out this last week, 4 schools last week, and we'll finish up this week with the other 2 elementaries. We did Wilson today and we'll work tomorrow on with Grizz and our cheerleaders. kids are excited. They're focusing in. As I talk to teachers, they are really, really excited about this year, and lots to do, and they know that. But with some of the new tools that are coming in, they're also seeing a level of support that they've not seen before. So we are off and running. We're kind of waiting for October 1 counts, which will happen here at the end of next week. On the 28th, actually, the first will be on the Monday. Our numbers are flat. We're not really seeing much more. We're actually down a little bit from last year, maybe 10 to 15 kids. Obviously, that is a concern when we look at our finances. We budgeted for zero growth, so we're not going to be disappointed in that process in terms of our budget. Around here, it's been wonderful to have Marcy and Dave join us as directors. It's been great to see. I mean, they hit the ground running and they haven't stopped. And as you know, the rest of our, between HR and with Suzanne and our educational focus with Robin's office, they have not stopped running, and the service we're trying to give from the district to for our schools has been there. We've had a few major challenges. We had when we had our work session or our board meeting, the last board meeting, I don't know if you noticed that there were some fans running in the hallway. That's because our air conditioner died in our server room, and the temperature in that room was getting closer to 110 than we would want, basically for a meltdown. But because of some great people within our IT department, we were able to save all of our servers, and we've now got a new air conditioning in there to try to make, we're getting a new air conditioning unit.
Maybe
we
need to go in the basement.
We're also looking at the fact that our IT room is amazingly expanding. And as we get into what we're doing with webs, I mean, it just, the bandwidth and everything else that we're needing is taking its toll. It's been great, but it also has its challenges. So we're going to be trying to work through those. And Dave is working on the long-term IT plan, both in terms of the educational side as well as the component side, the business side of it, because we are quickly running out of room. And as we've done a lot this year to keep things going, but it's amazing what has to happen behind the scenes in order to make things look like they're just humming. And some days that humming is a little off-key, but we've been trying to get it back on the key as quickly as possible. Any questions you might have of things that have happened over the last 3 weeks since school started?
How do you feel like the morale is?
As I've gone around, they've been happy. I mean, busy, extremely busy, but there's been a lot of very positive comments about things that are going on in each of the schools. So I have anecdotal from each of the schools. There is always concerns, but they're trying to be addressed at each of the levels.
I can tell you personally, I've never had so many positive things said to me about the high school. On all of you, that's even for students. It's so, you know. In all the years I've been on the board, I've never had so.
We've got some great teams and great teachers, great staff. It has been, it's not easy out there, but each one is looking principals are looking at how they can make things better in their schools, working very closely on the curriculum. And staffing right now, we still have some classified positions that have not been filled. And we're working hard to get that. Suzanne, what are we down to now on that?
We're probably down to a handful of special ed aides coming to be hired, and a few after school flights. Those aren't all the way complete. I don't know, Dave, you have a handle on that. You were interviewing again. But after school flights haven't started up yet, so they're just about the time now that they're being started up in those positions. Other than that, we're staff.
Suzanne, those interviews I did last week, just for this group too, it's still a great pool. I had four or five really good candidates there that they'll be able to fill the open and some problems. So,
there's not a ton left. A few. If you're one of the places that's without, you know, with the vacancy, you still fill it. It still like there's a ton left to hire, but not.
We have signed on our board meeting next week. You will have the ability to approve our negotiations. They have been completed now with our licensed and classified, and we'll be finishing up this week with our administrators. So that went very well. Thanks to Suzanne. She worked very, very diligently and hard on that. We actually met as an IDD group of all three to set up our kind of our tentative agendas as well as our dates of meeting between now and the end of the school year. So we've got all that set, and it was a great meeting to be with all three associations. So things are very, very strong. We're going.
New account? Okay.
Started today.
We
talked to the people who come down with me after we're done. We'll introduce you too.
Thank you. We were able to introduce everyone who had not come in yet. So. Sure, no
way.
Any other questions?
Okay, if not.
You didn't say that business office was doing a lot of stuff.
Yes, business office is doing a Herculean job right now to try to get everything done for our audit, which we're right in the middle of. Tomorrow at 1 will be our audit committee with Mike will be here. Kevin will be here for that. The changes in we made payroll with all the new changes. HR has been amazing to work with, and with payroll people as well. With the business department, their partnership has really made a difference. This change to a new financial system is a very, very challenging situation. It's going to be great when we get everything on to one and not have to worry about both. But it's a lot of work between now and December.
Did you all get the announcement for regional meetings?
Can't remember what date it is.
October 10th, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're involved in
Elements. Not at Elements. Yeah. It'll be for Cash, Rich, and ourselves. 6 o'clock.
Anything else?
No.
Okay, if not, we'll adjourn at 4:32.